This is Tri-State's Public Radio News. Communities and organizations are best off when they plan ahead for an emergency. That's the advice from someone who studied crisis communication. I talked to him about what communities should do to prepare for the unexpected. Tim Selnow says crises generally have three elements: a threat, a surprise factor, and a short response time. He says the best prepared communities and organizations conduct realistic emergency drills so they can learn what works and what needs to be improved before they have to respond to an actual crisis. And he says a spokesperson should be designated to keep the public informed during emergencies.
The first and foremost skill that a spokesperson needs is to understand the audience, because those needs are going to differ. And at times in crises, people might worry about something that there's no need to worry about. It doesn't matter. Their perception is reality, and that spokesperson needs to address that fear. Can't be ignored. On the other hand, there are times when people don't worry about something, and we want them to. A good example that I like to use reminds me of being a teenager growing up in Minnesota. When we'd have a tornado warning, the first thing that my brother and I would do is go out on the porch and look outside. Exactly the wrong thing to do. And so the warning had to try to, in that case, get me to worry about something I should have worried about. So that's one skill. Another thing is that the spokesperson is often a calming voice. By a calming voice, we mean that they're telling us that there are actions we can take that will indeed protect ourselves. And we want to know those actions. And simply by knowing that there's something we can do to protect ourselves, our loved ones, in some cases our property, just knowing that there are those steps to take, a spokesperson can be very calming.
A public safety plan, is that something that should be shared with the public, or should that be kept within a municipality and or organization?
It should be shared, and I'll say that unequivocally and definitely. There is a temptation not to share the plan because in doing so, some people fear that you're going to worry the public, that they'll see this kind of a plan and they'll think, my goodness, could it really be that bad? And you'll create unnecessary fears. And I disagree with that. I think it's the opposite. If in the research that I've done, I've been able to see that when publics know that we've got a plan in place and that we can be protective with that plan, it actually produces a kind of calm, including when the events occur.
Well, what sort of things are you looking at when you do research into this subject?
We do a number of things, and I'll tell you precisely what I'm most interested in, and that is the step between explaining the hazard, the threat, what's happening, and the action, the behavior people engage in to protect themselves, their loved ones, their family, to keep safe. I'm very curious in understanding what kind of message, nuances, changes, strategies in that explanatory process lead to the kinds of behavior that is most likely to be protective for those individuals. That is where the tremendous focus of my energy goes, the great majority.
Do you see the planning done ahead of time getting followed during times of crisis, or do these plans get forgotten about when all heck is breaking loose?
I see it both ways, and I see plans that have been developed with good intentions and that were very effective at one time. And then we see phone numbers have changed. Leadership at various first responding organizations has changed. Law enforcement, firefighters, city hall, to where the numbers are not accurate. The relationships aren't current. The hospital has moved. I've seen those kinds of dilapidation, we call it, in the crisis plan. And then we're at not much better off in a situation like that than we would have been if we were just making the plan up as we went along. On the other hand, I see a lot of organizations and communities that engage in annual simulations and training, and they're very, very candid and open to public to observe so people can watch this happen, where they test the plan, go through scenarios and simulations, and in doing so are able to find out two things. One, what part of the plan works, what doesn't work. But secondly, to build familiarity with each other so that they'll have worked together in this kind of circumstance before the actual event occurs.
An emergency plan, it sounds like it needs to be pretty broad. I imagine it would be difficult to plan for every type of thing that might come up.
You're right. And in fact, I would say that planning so narrowly and in that kind of detail could actually be a detriment, not an advantage, because you could be so certain with how, for example, a tornado will occur, a wildfire will approach a community, a hurricane will come to a coastal city, that you're not ready for the kinds of changes and the seeming chaos that these events actually bring with them when they occur. So there has to be that element of flexibility. And just as that's a good management principle for a lot of organizations, it's a good crisis planning principle to keep in mind.
Tim Selnau is a professor of strategic communication at the University of Central Florida. He came to Western Illinois University to deliver an annual lecture hosted by the Department of Communication. Selnau says the ability to forecast severe weather and other natural disasters is the best it's ever been, so we generally should not be caught off guard by such events. I'm Rich Ugger, Tri-States Public Radio News.